This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We have been on a stars high today, and I wanted to throw it back to the stars in just one second because we have amazing sounds, statistics from the Stars Game 7 win. But, you know, there was another big thing that happened in the Metroplex this weekend. Go ahead and give me cut number 6. They had to play the final round of the Byron Nelson because that's the rule. But realistically, this thing was over. Let me hear you, Scotty Scheffler.
He ties the record. Full circle for Scheffler. Scotty wins for the first time this year, and it comes in the event he attended as a kid.
Now, he won by 8 shots, so I know you would never do this. But I do think it would be a kind of a hilarious bit if you just kept putting it around the hole just for a little bit, just to kind of mess around.
You know what? This is an interesting, and I wanted to bring this up. I'm glad you said that. No, you don't do that because, Kevin, what if you do miss the one that matters the most?
Man, but it would be the biggest loser in history.
Oh, hey, look at me. But on Mikko Rantanen's last goal, the empty netter.
Yeah.
My mind was, he's going to walk the dog all the way into the net. That was what I was thinking, and then he ended up shooting it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's probably smarter of him to do that, because he did have somebody on his tail.
Yeah.
And it needed to get in quick. How bad would it be if you just kind of coast and do a Leon Lett right at the very end, and all of a sudden it gets taken, and then it gets taken back for another goal?
How many more people still would have had their hats today if that would not have happened?
Hey, by the way, do you know where those hats are?
They go to charity.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Now, Scotty Scheffler, after round 3, he was tied for the biggest lead since the 2011 U.S. Open with Rory McIlroy. He goes ahead and sets all kinds of scoring records at the Nelson. He wins the tournament. And, Alec, did you hear one of the things that he said in his post-tournament victory speech?
Heard a few different things. Where are we going here?
Go Stars is what I love. So he was clearly led to victory by the greatness of the Stars. And we're going to get to the greatness of the Stars in just one second. But Corey, I know that the actual reason you weren't here on Friday was so that you could travel to Kentucky. Give me cut number 15.
I swear if you play a KM.
Corey had his fancy hat on as he was undoubtedly at the Kentucky Derby.
Neil Ekwos is the leader at the top of the stretch. Journalism is on the move as they turn for home, and Sovereignty is coming with him on the outside. The two of them go right by with a furlong to run. Journalism and Sovereignty, nose to nose, down to the last 16th of a mile. Sovereignty has taken the lead. Journalism is second toward the inside. Baez is third, but it will be Sovereignty to rule the Kentucky Derby.
By the way, a lot of people had thoughts about it coming down to the names of those two particular
horses.
I was
definitely pulling for Journalism, but it's obviously it's failed.
You lost.
Yeah.
So this was the most
watched more important.
Kentucky Derby since 1989.
Why?
I don't know.
Like, was it because one of Toby Keith's horses was out there or something?
Maybe they liked that it was in the rain. I don't know. How many people do you think
wild.
Watched the Kentucky Derby?
A million?
17.7 million people in North America tuned in to watch the Kentucky Derby.
That is, seriously, what's the significance of this specific one? Or are we just there with betting now?
So,
or plays?
I don't necessarily, it could be either one. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's just that, because believe it or not, that's only up 6% from last year. Like, don't get me wrong. If your ratings go up 6%, you're like, hell yeah. I just didn't want to make it seem like usually the Kentucky Derby gets like 4 million people. Like, it is always a ratings monster, and they have a whole block of programming with other races and their pregame and those amazing interviews they do on horses, which I always think is super cool. After they win, they're like, I'm a reporter on a horse. Please tell me how it went. And you won with that horse. So that was super neat. But the best of the entire weekend. Give me cut number two. Still not entirely sure how this worked, but damn it, it did.
And off the clock here in the third period. Rantanen again. Rantanen scores! Off the skate of Girard, the former Colorado Avalanche star has scored twice to tie it for Dallas.
Now, I'm really glad that I think it's McDonough who said that. I'm really glad he did, because otherwise I watched the goal. I saw how it happened. I did not understand how that puck got into the net.
Yeah, you used the word physics this morning.
Yes.
And that was exactly what I was thinking. And then when I finally saw it bounce off somebody's skate, that was the moment. Because Kevin, when I was watching that, I was watching it on replay. And so I couldn't hear it. So I was watching it going, oh my gosh, that's pretty special right there. The fact that he, again, that was Kate moment. He just said, I'm going to take advantage. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to make it happen. He did. And the Avs looked foolish. I love that even more.
They like did.
When one of your players looks foolish because he knows he just made a mistake and now you're all knotted up. And how many times did they say against his former team and the rest of that, like the rest of that game, oh, what he's doing against his former team. But that play right there, Kevin, was, I don't know how many people can make that kind of thing happen the way he did. I really don't.
By the way, from the 469, are you going to overlook the amazing racing out at TMS this weekend? Coming up next, we're going to talk with the man who was the Grand Marshal at the NASCAR race yesterday at TMS, Shea Wiggum. We'll talk to him in about 15 minutes. I hadn't really thought about this, but this is a great point that multiple people have brought up in addition to the gambling and the fashion and everything like that, is the Netflix show that people have been watching that's in the vein of the F1 show and the golf and the tennis
show. Full Swing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Drive to Survive.
So a lot of people think that has kind of like upped the ante as well.
And multiple people have said that all of the horses were descendants of Secretariat? Is that true?
I have no idea.
And if that's the case, I didn't see the Secretariat run, so I'm not really sure, but he was fast.
And studded a lot.
Dude, that's pretty wild. And it could be from Kay Adams. You know, she goes out there every year and she does a wonderful series from there with her Up and Adams show. So I'll give her some credit on that. Mm-hmm. She has the nice dresses, talks about the $15,000 mint julep or whatever they have.
Is that a real thing?
There is a very, I think, is it $5,000 drink? It's something ridiculous.
That is unbelievable.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So let's dive into some of the amazing facts and figures from the Stars win. Probably the most amazing, and I know that people are aware, and we've brought this up. Pete DeBoer is now 9-0 in game sevens.
So I listened to his full post game after on Sunday. I went back and listened to it, and he said, I really like this question. I thought it was a great question. What's been the common thread in all of these game sevens for you? And he said, I think all but two of them have been at home.
Okay.
So, and I went back and counted. And I think it was only one was on the road.
Oh, wow.
But I might be wrong.
That helps.
Sometimes that happens. That being said, yeah, being at home, he gave all the credit to the Dallas Stars crowd. Miko, after the game, he was like, dude, the crowd gave us the energy. It was quiet in that place
yeah.
until the first goal happened, and then they came back to life. So that's the way. I did not try to get off myself by hanging out with the horses.
You're gonna want to reflect on the way
I did
you
not
said
try
that.
To. Oh my gosh, somebody texted and asked a question. I'm sorry,
because you're
apologies.
Allergic to horses.
Yeah, but yeah, the common thread there, Kevin, he thinks is that it's been because he's had a lot of home games, and that's helpful whenever you're at home because you can control a few more things. Your line shifts are different and stuff like that too.
Now, while he is 9-0 in game sevens, Colorado has lost 7 straight game sevens. Now,
we own Colorado, by the way.
Hey, what's the tweet I put out? Death, taxes, and the Stars beating the Avalanche in a game seven. Clockwork every single time. I actually ran into somebody at the Dallas Card Show who's a huge Avs fan, and they're like, just let us have this one. And I was like, no.
No way.
I will not.
There is no way.
By the way, quick note. You know who else I was very careful not to run into, but I said hello to at the Dallas Card Show?
Is her body fragile?
Derek Lively.
Oh, he answered the question.
Derek Lively was at the Dallas Card Show on Friday, and what I loved about it is he was haggling with people. Not haggling, that's what I was doing. But he was out there, and he's like, oh, only 80% of comps? I don't know. And so, like, I just loved that he was, like, going around, and he's like, hey, I don't care if I do have lots of money. Well, there's room to negotiate here, all right? Let's figure something
were
out.
Were you following
yeah,
him
no,
to
I
hear
was,
that? Or?
So I was talking to him.
Okay, gotcha.
And like, so I talked to him, and then he was, like, moving into
that's cool.
the Starlight Room, which is, like, the smaller room at the Dallas Card Show. And it was just great to watch his, like, process and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And so, yeah.
That is really cool. That's really awesome that he was able to have a little chat with you while he was doing that. You know, better than that time that we had a chat with Brandon Carr. Obviously.
I don't know how many people know that story.
Long
That's
story.
For like three
for
people.
Another, it's for our podcast.
Okay. Jake Ottinger.
The history behind the KNC masterpiece.
Ooh, all right. I would listen to that. Mikko Rantanen is the first player in NHL history to have a 4-point period in back-to-back games. Not in the playoffs, ever. It was never done by Gretzky, Howe, or nobody. And, like, I thought this at first was just for the playoffs. And that makes sense because they were like, oh, yeah, him and Hintz, 4-point playoff periods. That's tied for the most ever. So when he did it again, I was like, well, that makes sense that would be a record. But then when they said no player has ever done that in the history of hockey,
mm-hmm.
that is freaking amazing. But we don't stop there. Mikko Rantanen, he also the Stars became the fourth team in NHL history with a multi-goal third period comeback to win a game seven. You know how many multi-goal third period comebacks the Stars had this year?
None.
None is the correct answer. Throughout the regular season and obviously into the playoffs, they had no game where they overcame a multiple goal deficit and won the game, let alone won it in regulation, because the Dallas Stars are the first team in the history of the playoffs to be trailing by multiple goals in the third period of a game seven and win in regulation.
That's insane.
Now, teams have come back and eventually won in overtime.
But not in regulation.
Yeah. Guess what? You just freaking saw it yesterday in the Winnipeg and St. Louis game where Winnipeg came back from 2 goals down in the last 2 minutes and scored, I think, with 3 seconds left to tie the game. But they won in overtime. The Stars are the first playoff team to do so and still win in regulation. That kind of shows you the breadth of that collapse from the Colorado Avalanche.
Oh, and that is, you say the collapse, and that's what they've got to be feeling.
For sure.
Like we on our side, we're looking at it as we went and took it from them. You know, like me.
And I don't want to dispute
that. But I bet in Colorado right now, that's what they're talking about is the epic collapse in their game. And how many times it happened to them this series where they lost it late in the game.
And the only reason is there's no way you can't. Because you go back to game 3, and we talked about it. I'm sure Avalanche fans still think there's no way they should have lost that game. But you did in overtime. And the fact that they've lost 7 in a row now, that's why I want to say Colorado collapse. I don't want to make sound like Mikko and the Stars didn't take it from them. But if you've lost 7 game sevens in a row, you have to be like, what the hell? Did you see the headline for the sports section of the Denver Post?
I did not.
You're gonna love it. All right. So what happened that same day?
They got scrambled.
No, okay. I'm not the doing Denver that. Scrambled. By the way, tune in for Mike Bassick having to plug those upside down hats. He's going to have to do it. But the Nuggets dusted the Clippers. And so that in the middle of the front page of the sports section, they have Russell Westbrook dunking, and it says seventh heaven. At the very top of the page, it's Miko scoring the empty netter, and the headline is seventh hell.
That's pretty good.
It is
the seventh gate of hell.
Yeah, that's it is awesome. Tremendous because, like, technically that's one on top, but the one that got the middle of the page and gets the focus is the win. And
I like it.
What a whirlwind of a day for Colorado and more specifically Denver sports fans to go from the highest of highs to looking like you're going to match it, only to see another loss.
I don't know if it was the same day, Kevin. We did kind of have that last year when the Mavericks made it to the NBA Finals with Luka and that team where Luka was on it. And then the Stars, we expected them to keep going and they lost. But yeah, that is kind of a weird time when you have both teams doing something like that.
Now, are you prepared for Jake Oettinger appreciation stats?
Absolutely, man. He was the phenomenator yet again, and absolutely. Gotta love it.
Jake Oettinger in career game sevens. He's 3-1. Oh, he lost one? Yeah, probably not his fault. 1.65 goals against average.
Dang. Dude.
A save percentage of 950. If you have a save percentage of like 920, you're right up there, if not outright leading the league. Goals saved above expected, 6. Now think about that for a minute. That means the number of goals he actually gave up is equal to the number of goals more that he should have given up per the numbers. That's freaking amazing. And his save percentage in the third period and overtime, 943. Again, as I just told you, if you're hovering near 920, you're doing unfreaking believable and thumbs up for everybody. He's at 950 for game sevens. And then in the crunch time, when it matters the most, third period and overtime, 943 save percentage. I know there are times.
That's what DeBoer said.
Yes.
It's the timing of his saves
and
of his elite play.
He's somebody that I know sometimes hockey fans and Stars fans get upset about.
For sure.
But look at the numbers, man. We talked about it. You're going to need him to win you a game. I could argue going back to game 3, he won you that game. And he was a key component of keeping it at 2 and not losing in game 7.
Oh, absolutely, man.
We're the KNC Masterpiece. I almost said game and C. That's not right. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we said that we would go back to Texas Motor Speedway. Let's talk with a man who is an actor extraordinaire, also was the Grand Marshal at the NASCAR race yesterday. Shea Wiggum next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now in studio, we bring to you one of the stars of the upcoming Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. And also, he was the Grand Marshal for yesterday's NASCAR race at Texas Motor Speedway. It's Shea Wiggum. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. It's a pleasure to be here with you, too.
Now, I know you were at Texas Motor Speedway in, like, a different capacity. But last night was the last episode of The Righteous Gemstones. And I immediately was thinking about your part as racing champion Dusty Daniels. I think it was only in like 2 or 3 episodes, but it made an impact. And we had this coming up and I was like, oh man, it was meant to be.
Rest in peace, the heater smoke and rust, Dusty Daniels.
That's right.
I love that. I love that going in. That was my probably third thing with Danny McBride. I mean, he's one of my closest friends and we happened to do my second film ever with him. And now he's gone on to do these great things on HBO.
Yeah, it's incredible. That Vice Principals, obviously Eastbound and Down, just go,
oh,
go,
yeah.
go.
Kenny Powers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think Vice Principals is one of the most underrated shows to come through. I love that show.
I can see that as well. My wife is a teacher and her best friend is a vice principal. So she loves that show. Absolutely. I don't know if there's like the same behind the scenes stuff if you've seen the show, but man, she freaking loves that show.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your experience? I want to get back into acting in a second, but can you tell us about your experience over the weekend and then yesterday at Texas Motor Speedway?
Yeah. They asked me to be the Grand Marshal and I didn't know what I was walking into. I didn't know what to expect, but the expectations were pretty high. And I got to tell you, I mean, it blew my expectations away. You know, they were so great. I grew up, I'm older than you guys. I grew up with the old school, like Earnhardt Sr., Earnhardt Jr., Jimmy Johnson, Mark Martin, and all those guys. So I knew them all. And I grew up 30 minutes from Daytona in Lake Mary, Florida.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, the boys from the little, I say now, the Little League boys from Lake Mary won the Little League World Series last year. So now I say I'm from Lake Mary where the boys are from.
Good claim.
Yeah, and it was amazing. You know, I was, be honest with you, I was really, I told you before we started, I was nervous saying that just a one line driver start your engine, because you go over and you head over and over again, and how am I going to do it? And then when they point to you to do it, everything goes out the window, because you look up finally at 250,000 people, and I fumbled over it like almost, you know, so it was amazing.
You're a professional actor too, and we're professional talkers. I still fumble over stuff all the time. It still happens, but yeah.
It well could happen in this interview.
Yeah,
so
it probably will.
We'll
actually
try to act surprised when it does happen. Now, go ahead.
I was kind of curious, because he was talking about a lot of the comedy stuff that you've done. My dad, growing up, I watched Perry Mason with him all the time. And then so there you are in something that serious. That was an extremely serious show that you were part of. But I was like, man, I wish I had him as my right-hand man. That dude, I trust him with my life there. Man. It's really interesting watching you. You have a look that you can pull off detective, cop. You have this type of look, but you add these elements into the character every time I've seen you.
I think
that
what you're saying is, with a mug like this, I can play anybody.
Yeah, you can play anybody. But it's the other part of it, though.
He really pigeonholed you
as
character actor right there, didn't he?
No, I appreciate it.
No, I really appreciate it. I mean, whether it's American Primeval that just came out, or Perry Mason, or Boardwalk Empire, for me to see, I have a litmus test. I like to see my closest friends, one who's here with me right now, do they just for even maybe a minute forget that I'm, because they know you intimately, or my family, my wife, you know, and if they forget for just a minute that, oh, that's Eli Thompson, or that's, you know, Jasper Briggs from Mission Impossible, you know, like that's the goal.
I know, obviously, totally separate from your characters, but please tell me, at your house, you have a collection of amazingly historical hats from all the different roles that you've had, because
you wear some cool hats.
Yeah, Boardwalk Empire and everything. Please tell me you have a plethora of all these cool hats.
No, I do. I've got the fedora from that. I've got the newsboy from Perry Mason. I do. I got the Dusty. You know, I got the Dusty Daniel. I got them all. Yeah.
That's
an important part.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. That makes me unreasonably happy. Now, you just mentioned the new movie, Mission Impossible, Final Reckoning. What do we need to know going into this other than Tom Cruise does all his own stunts? I've heard that numerous times.
Yeah, look, that takes care of itself. You're going to see the most brilliant stunts, and he does everything. And I like you, when I got there, I thought, maybe there's a smoke and mirrors in here, and somebody, a stuntman, jumps in somewhere. It doesn't. He does everything. But what people don't know is that how much he loves cinema and how much he loves acting. Like, so when we have a scene in this, I'll just say, without giving too much away, on a G5, he and I. And we go toe to toe, and he got so excited, just as excited about that as he does hanging off a biplane, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's really quite amazing. So is McQuarrie. That's why they get better and better. These things get better and better, you know?
Yeah, they just keep going bigger, you know, with some of the action on it and the cast over this time has grown into something special too, man. That's a great cast they got.
Oh man, we have a deep bench. You know, like we go 5, 6, 8 deep. You know, you look around, there's Nick Offerman. We're introducing Nick Offerman. You know, we're bringing a lot of heavies in it, and it's because they like film and they like great stories. So you're not just waiting for the next stunt that Tom's going to do. You like the characters. You know what I mean? You get to know the characters.
Well, and you just mentioned somebody that I don't know if everybody is as familiar with this person, but the movie's directed by Christopher McQuarrie. He's also the writer. He wrote The Usual Suspects,
yes,
which is one of my all-time favorite movies. And that's one of the things that gets me excited. Like, I know that's not like Christopher McQuarrie presents and everyone's like, the hell with Tom Cruise. But like, that's one of the things that has me amped up for movies like this.
Oh, man. Well, you said it. I'm glad you brought that up. Here he is. He comes out to Hollywood. Here's a little story. He comes out to Hollywood and he's writing, nothing's getting done, nothing's getting made. And he writes this little thing, Usual Suspects. And they make it. And he goes on to get nominated and wins the first time out. So he says, I'm sitting there with four heavies waiting for my name not to be called. And I get called. And he goes up there. And then from there, he makes one more film called Way of the Gun.
Which is a good movie. A
very good film. But Hollywood, you know, they didn't, it didn't make, quote unquote, the money that it should have. And so he goes into kind of, you know, director's jail for a little while. He doesn't do anything.
Go back just real quick, people, if you haven't heard of the movie or seen it, watch the first like 5 to 7 minutes of Way of the Gun. You'll know if that movie is for you or not.
Oh, man. Benicio del Toro, who's a friend, is in it. But he goes and he starts and he really continues to study film. Macquarie does. And he gets in the room with Tom Cruise and he goes, they were having trouble with the fourth mission. They didn't know how, they were really running up against something. And he goes, I know how to fix it. I'm telling you, I know how to fix it. And Tom brings him over to the Middle East. It's the one where Tom is climbing up the building.
Yes.
The red,
those
green
gloves.
And McHugh came up with the gloves and how they work. And the rest of the film fell into place. And ever since then, he and Tom are thick as thieves.
That's awesome.
Now, your daughter Georgia's in acting as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, he said that.
I was really hoping
I'm waiting to see where you go.
Well, I was just kind of curious. Y'all were in Waco together.
She did do Waco.
And right. I was kind of curious on the front of that, like working, seeing her go into that. And
yeah, I'll put a plug out. First of all, she does it on her. She's better actor than I am already. She does a show called Ted.
Yes, yes.
About the bear that is so funny.
Shockingly good.
I'm telling you, yeah. My daughter Georgia is with Seth MacFarlane does it, who is the genius of all geniuses, as well as on the comedy end. So yeah, she does Ted.
And I'm not saying this because you're here. What I really love the first Ted movie. The second one, but when the TV show came out, I was like,
expectations are always a little different.
They were low.
Like
it was so much better than I thought it had any right to be.
I agree. Yeah, she loves doing Ted.
Yeah, that was my kind of the thought is like, dude, navigating that world, because my kids are like, I want to be in radio, Dad. I'm like, no, you don't. And so I'm always kind of giving them other advice on things like that. So I just always want to be in acting or?
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm up against, right, with that. I tried to steer it away from, you know, it's so hard to make it in acting. It's impossible. It's probably like radio, you know, and. But if they want to do it, they'll find a way to do it. So
it's a job lotto, you know. It is one of those things. You hit the lottery, you feel lucky that you're able to do it. You know, you worked hard to get there.
That's right.
But you're definitely like, man, there's a limited amount of these things that exist. So
yeah, you do. And it never gets easier for in my bit, you know, because I'm doing something right now, but I'm unemployed a lot of the time, you know.
Yeah.
And what that does to you.
Yeah.
You know.
And that was that's interesting because when you see a script. How quickly do you know I'm this character or I want to be in on this character?
Yeah,
I want to be in this thing.
That's a good question, man. That's a really good. I have to, at this stage, I've been lucky enough. I have to really respond to it, you know, and it could be for a number of reasons. It could be because, you know, you want to, it could be Scorsese's directing it. So you go and you jump off on Boardwalk or The Wolf of Wall Street. So it could be director. A lot of times it's the actor that I haven't worked with, and I got a list like everyone else, you know. So I did the new Brad Pitt, the F1, and you know, but circling back to like Cruise and Macquarie, I just didn't want to work with them. So to get that, here's a little story. I go to one party a year really in Hollywood, and it's the Golden Globes party.
Okay.
And it's where everybody shows up. I mean, it is that you've got the old timers. You look in there, you got Nicholson and you got DeVito and Douglas. And then you look, and then you got Cruise and Pitt. And so I went to this and I'd just done Homecoming with Julia Roberts, this great little piece.
Yes, it is.
And I just come out and I see Macquarie across the room at this party. And we're both pretty shy, you know, guys. And we kind of circle around each other and we hit and I said, listen, I'm not going to be too cool for school here. I like what you guys do a lot. I loved Usual Suspects. I love Way the Gun, but I love what you do. And he goes, I saw Homecoming. Tom has seen Homecoming and we're going to write something for you.
That's awesome.
And I went, that's awesome. Just like that. That's awesome. And I said, that is. And, but then that was in January of that year. I remember it like it was yesterday. And the whole calendar year goes by. And I'm sitting at home on December 15th, I remember, and I get a text that comes through and it says, is this still you? and I don't recognize the number. And I go, it is. And he goes, this is McHugh. I'm calling from a Europe number in 5 minutes. Pick up. I got somebody who wants to speak to you. I said, oh, I guess it's going to be really, really good or really, really bad. So I'm there and I'm holding the thing and I go on my upper register like, hello? And I go, he goes, hey, it's McHugh. I said, hey, it's good to speak to you. And he goes, look, there's somebody here who wants to speak to you and talk to you. I go, oh, okay. I'm not even thinking. And he goes, hey, buddy, it's Tom Cruise. How you doing? I go, I'm doing great, Tom. You know, I'm out of body. And he goes, listen, I've seen some of your stuff that you've been doing. How would you like to come not do one mission movie, but two mission movies? And we're going to go everywhere. Make sure you got your passport ready because we're going to Norway and then we're going to Venice and Rome, Italy. And then we're going to circle back to London and then we're going to be in South Africa. And I go, you had me.
Yes.
You had me at Norway, man.
I'm Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So talk with Shea Whigham right here on 105 Through the Fan. You're probably not supposed to say, but I'm going to give it a shot nonetheless. I've used my amazing powers of deduction. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning comes out May 23rd. Is this going to be the last Mission Impossible movie?
Oh, knowing Tom, I mean, he's capable of anything. So I don't know. I know that this is the best. It's the best one that we've done.
Wow.
Everything that you'll see when you see it, everything that he has done has led up to this mission. You know what I mean? Like he's pushed beyond anything he has been before. So the stunts that he's doing, and when we were in South Africa with the plane and then the underwater stuff, you're not gonna believe it. And we really hope people see it, and I hope they have an IMAX here that you can go see it, because when you see that, as big as it is, and you see what he's doing, you're gonna be blown away.
I believe if you live in the Metroplex, there's one in Dallas off of Webb Chapel.
All right.
There's a big IMAX right there. Just a suggestion for people.
Yeah. When you say Tom has that, like, that ability to do things, the Tropic Thunder character and the way that all came about, like, that's the thing I think of is he was just like, hey, I kind of want to do this and I'm going to dance, watch this.
Yeah.
It turns out awesome.
Yeah. Whatever he touches, you know, he all of a sudden you'll, I remember I had a Thanksgiving ready to go. I've done two Thanksgivings. I've missed two Thanksgivings because of Mission.
Wow.
You know, so you're there and you're out in some location. And my wife has got everything together. We've flown the family in. It's 2 days or 48 hours away. And I get a call and I'm like, he goes, hey, Shay, it's Tom. This is McHugh. We're in Africa. We're in South Africa. We've got this location, but there's weather moving in. We got good news and bad news. And I said, well, what is it? He goes, well, the good news is that you're gonna jump on a plane right now and come over. The bad news is you're gonna miss Thanksgiving with the family. But I got more good news. And
okay.
I go, what's that? He goes, when we're done wrapping that day on Thanksgiving, I've flown in a bunch of turkeys and we're gonna have a spread like you've never believed. And I'm gonna fly you on my helicopter from that location. Me, you and McHugh and Henry Cherney. And we had a spread, man. It's one that I remember, you know, like I had to tell my wife. She's like, well, how was it? I go, I mean, it wasn't as good as what we would have.
Yeah, it's nothing like we got here at home. You know, it was fine.
Good answer.
All right. Yeah.
This morning we mentioned your name, and one of our morning show hosts, who's obsessed with Fast and the Furious, is like, "Yep, I know him from the Fast and the Furious movies." But like, those are super popular. What I was curious about is there a piece of work that you've done that people consistently ask you about that you're like, "I had no idea so many people had seen this, or that it was this popular."
That's one, you know, because I came in for a quick pop on that and I get my nose famously busted up by Paul, you know, and then it becomes Justin Lin had it become a thing. So yeah, I mean, when I do Silver Linings Playbook, but I gained probably 35 pounds for that just for character stuff. And so, you know, that was a sports movie, which a lot of people, you know. And we caught Bradley, you know, and Jennifer Lawrence and De Niro. We caught them all at the apex, and they all got nominated. So that's a pretty good one.
Well, the movie Mission Impossible Final Reckoning comes out May 23rd, 2025. It was really awesome having you in studio, man.
Oh, man. Thanks. It was my pleasure, man.
Yeah, you're just as cool as we thought.
Thanks, man.
We're going to replay that question where he goes, now your daughter.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Hey, we're going to replay that question.
Go Noles. My father used to play at Florida State, so go.
Okay.
They're only the number 9 most toxic fan base in college sports, is what I recently found out. I got that coming up at 1 o'clock today.
Oh, no, man.
Next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. When Amari Cooper reunion actually excites some Cowboys fans. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
Tight end in motion, sets up behind the tackle. Back to his left, 2nd and 8. Going to throw. Time over the middle. Down to the 5, walking into the end zone. Touchdown to Amari Cooper!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, let's go around the entire NFL and dip into some Gridiron Gravy.
And rip it. Sorry.
No, you're good. We talked some about this last week. Yeah, no, don't worry. That's how Noah is. Every time we read a book, you turn the page, think we're going to read, and he wants to tell you something about that page. And even when you wait, he's going to wait until you start talking to jump in there. So I feel like I'm very well versed against that.
Lucy always wanted to go back to the page and at it for about 5 more seconds.
So Noah waits until we get toward the end of the book and he goes, let me read it. And I was like, good try.
Yes.
I know you're trying not to go to bed.
Stay up a little later.
So we talked about this last week and probably the last couple of weeks, but I wanted to go back to y'all specifically. Would a Cowboys Amari Cooper reunion excite you? That's an article that came up from Blogging the Boys. And the other reason why I thought about it is somebody at the Dallas Card Show told me that we had signed Keenan Allen and was really angry about it. And
right.
I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, not so much. Not saying would not happen. And I'm sure Zach Wilchuk would have lots of fiery thoughts about that I would be here for. But
so we didn't sign him?
No. Correct.
What? How do they know? How do they feel? I don't know.
Yeah.
It must have been the Wolchuk tweet.
Trust me. There was also multiple people who said, have you heard the thing that Dirk is going to take over for Nico as the GM? And I was like, he is not. I'm so sorry to tell you.
Yeah,
that.
He's.
They're like, no, I saw it online. Yeah. I was like, no, I know exactly what you're referencing. And it's not going to happen.
He's not happy with them.
So my question, specifically Alec and Corey, let me get y'all started. What do you think about if it is Amari Cooper? And if you want to take it out to Keenan Allen, we can, but that feels like a separate conversation.
With Amari Cooper, I was listening, and that really kind of helped refresh some of the things this morning as I was listening to the morning show. The age and the simple fact that his body is not getting any better.
Sure.
And he was missing a lot. From a lot of team from the Browns and the Bills the last couple of years. So his age and the fact that Kevin, when he was here, he looked like he walked like a 70-year-old man. Yeah. We watched him at training camp and we were like, dude, he looks kind of beat up.
Yeah,
I know he has a connection with Dak, and I know we have a connection and a need for a receiver too. But it just seems like that dude might disappear at times, and I don't really know. Again, this is what I said last week. I don't know what motivates him. So I'm not really certain that I want to bring him into this team as Schottenheimer is trying to build this new culture and is making all these plans to be a successful head coach.
The question is, does it excite me? No, it doesn't excite me. It pacifies me in this moment because I do think that you need a little bit of help. I don't think he's as washed, as beat up as people want to say right now, just because, you know, it was a been there, done that situation. We had him once. It didn't work out initially. He's been gone. It feels like forever now. So people assume he's super old. He's only 30 years old. I do think that the position that he would come in and play today on this team is very different than what he was asked to play when the Cowboys traded for him. So
yes,
I do
absolutely
think that the lack of attention, because CeeDee Lamb has evolved into a true top receiver in this game that's going to command double coverage more times than not, I do think that benefits Amari Cooper, and it helps the present-day Amari Cooper, and it helps the present-day Cowboys. So I do think it's a good move. It doesn't excite me, but I think it's the right move to make.
I think that's a very fair way of classifying it. Now, you talked about the things that Schottenheimer is trying to do. I don't know if you care about such things, but I'll bring you the news and let you decide for yourself. Brian Schottenheimer shuffled up the locker room So now you have Micah Parsons right next to Dak Prescott.
Okay.
Obviously, two of your top players, both in terms of ability and soon to be monetarily, different sides of the ball, but they're going to put them together. And Schottenheimer, he's like, look, there's a method to the madness, and I don't think it's particularly complicated to figure out why you would put Micah, who is unbelievable, but maybe still learning his way as a leader, next to the person who for quite some time has been the leader of this team.
Yeah, the method to madness is always, you hear when a guy comes and takes over, he'll hear that as he's trying to make some changes or adjustments or grow things. But yeah, and you talk about leadership. I think we can all agree that that's the first quality we talk about with that, with him.
100%.
And with Micah, it's the first quality we talk about. We hope he grows more. Sure. So in that department. So I think I'll trust Schottenheimer until he shows me I can't.
Let's go from that to the Washington Commanders. The Washington Commanders are going to host the 2027 NFL Draft in Washington, D.C. Obviously, last week we talked about rebuilding or building the new stadium on the site of the old RFK. And now what they're going to do is it's expected to be held at the National Mall, where the Washington Monument stands.
There's a mall there?
I think that, I don't specifically think it's like a shopping mall.
Like the base of it, just a huge Mall of America.
I think that is the expression for all of the different places around there. If it helps, this is the part, or I believe this is the area where Jenny ran through the water to get to Forrest Gump.
Because there were too many people.
If that helps you out.
Yeah.
And if you've seen like different marches or protests. I remember
Captain America and the Falcon. They ran around it together, and Captain America ran really fast.
Obviously, that was a stunning turn of events for me. But I'm not saying this will happen, but you've seen from previous, whether it's celebrations or protests, that place can easily hold a million people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And now I'm not saying a million people will be at the draft, but if you're looking for a place, you're like, hey, we have unlimited space. It's either at that Lady Gaga concert or it's at the National Mall for the NFL draft.
Do you think that the D.C. fans will show up? Do you think they'll be there for it?
I do.
They're excited now?
Because, I mean, look, who knows what the next couple of years will bring, but you got to think the Commanders are on the right trajectory.
They're feeling hot.
And then the fact that you're bouncing the new stadium back over closer to that area, I would think that they're pretty fired up about that. Let's go from that to, I want to know how this family vote went. Because Abdul Carter looked like he was going to get number 11 from Phil Simms. And then Phil Simms said his family outvoted him. It feels like Phil Simms would be in a unique position to be like, hey, that's great.
Okay.
That's my number, and I will choose to let somebody have it if they want. I don't feel like I would get outvoted on that. It would be like if my wife and older son were like, hey, we're changing the name of your show. And I'd be like, well, hold on.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
That would be really weird.
That would be really weird. But do you think it's odd that Phil Simms is like, I got outvoted, or do you think his family was the scapegoat when he realized he didn't want to do that?
That could definitely be one of them, the last part that you said there. But at the same time, he's always seemed like such a family man, Kevin. So maybe it's always been a democracy in the Simms household when it comes to decisions.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, if he's going to threaten a college athletics program that if they don't play his son, even if he's the inferior quarterback, then they'll get him the hell out of there. Maybe they're just paying him back.
Mm-hmm, probably so.
I appreciate those family bonds. Good for them for making that happen. All right, couple of more things for you. The Packers have now put out another tush-push proposal that will ban all pushing.
What?
Even if
there's no pushing?
Even if you push it real good? Hey, the story is legitimate. If you didn't like that joke at the end, that's fine. I want you to know the story is legitimate.
Oh, my gosh. Good. Okay. So hold on. They're canceling pushing. What about
in this proposal?
Okay, in the proposal.
Because it is weird. They're like, you can't do a tush push. Oh, can I do other pushing? That's fine.
Mm-hmm. You have to push like the back or the legs.
Yeah, that would make no sense. You so that it, put is your the back new into it. Proposal. See, you get it. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, the Rangers win. DeGrom sets a record, but we're probably going to talk more about all of those other transactions. Next, right here on The Fan.